5. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
So good, everyone. Welcome. Nice to be with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. It's the weekend, huh? Especially since we've passed 12 noon here on a Friday and the second weekend in June already. Gosh, big weekend around here. My goodness, we got a lot of stuff going on, including, of course, the Bantam Jeep Heritage Festival. Downtown Butler is going to be buzzing later this afternoon and tonight, that's for sure. Well, we're going to be buzzing here, too. We have several guests to chat with on the It's Your Turn program today. And we'll meet our first guest in a moment. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about Cuba. What do you know about Cuba? I don't know a whole lot about Cuba, to be honest. I know the Cuban Missile Crisis back in the Kennedy era. Fidel Castro, of course. Cigars. Guantanamo. That's about it. We'll talk with Liza Gershman today about Cuba. And she also talks about some of the foods of Cuba. She is a well-recognized photographer and travel writer. Also today, we'll talk for a few minutes, kind of a funny conversation with Allison Pearson. She's an English woman who's written a couple of funny books about, life as a girl and life as a woman would be the best way to describe it. She's a pretty funny lady. She'll be with us a little bit later on the program as well for a short chat. But first of all, we are so happy to welcome Isabel Stevens to our studio, an acquaintance of long standing. Isabel, it's good to see you. It's nice to have you here today.
Thank you, Dave. It's good to be here.
We've talked with Isabel before, but we wanted to have her back because this weekend will mark the 60th anniversary of her miraculous survival of a killer tornado out in Kansas. And it's quite a story that she has to tell, and we're going to go over that with her. The actual anniversary of that killer tornado, Isabel, would be this Sunday, right?
Sunday, June the 10th at 5:45.
5:45 in the afternoon out in Kansas. Yes. I did a little research when I found out you were going to be coming here and chatting with us today. It was a Tuesday that happened.
Really?
Yeah, well, you know, the actual date when it happened, 60 years ago. And Isabel and her new husband were on their honeymoon. You were taking a honeymoon trip, right?
Yes, out to Winfield, Kansas, to see my Aunt Bertha.
And were you married here in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
So then you had driven the whole way out to Kansas?
Yes.
Probably a couple of days' trip, I would imagine.
Huh? Yes.
And you were on the Kansas Turnpike, I believe,
yes,
right?
Yes, we got on to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. And suddenly this tornado struck near the town of El Dorado, Kansas, and you were swept away.
Yes. And can I take over?
Oh, yes, please, please.
Yeah. I want to say this to you folks that are listening to me. Today is the present. Yesterday, that's history. Tomorrow is mystery. Little did I think when I went out to the car that particular day that I would be in a tornado.
Yeah, yeah.
The tornado was 140 miles an hour. The hail was as big as baseball. I was unconscious for 3 weeks and unidentified for 2.
That's the most amazing part about this, because when the tornado hit your car... Can you pull your chair in just a touch there and get a little closer to that microphone for me? That's good. That'll keep my engineer happy there, Isabel. That's good. That's fine. You were in your car, of course. You were sucked out of the car.
I was blown 500 feet.
And through a fence, is that right?
Through a wire fence. And the only thing that was left on me was my shoes, my rings, and my watch, which was stopped at 5:45.
So all your clothes were blown off and everything?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. and a man was on his way home from work. And he had to detour because where he wanted to go to his home, there was debris, police, and fire trucks. Mm-hmm. So he went through this field, and there I was lying. He didn't bother. He put me in his pickup truck. He didn't bother covering me up.
He thought you were dead?
He thought I was done for.
Wow.
And on the way to the hospital, he had a flat tire. But he didn't stop because he knew my life was more important. So after they got me to the hospital, they cleaned the sand and the mud and everything up of me, off of me, and did some vital signs and couldn't get nothing. So immediately they put me in a temporary morgue. And there I was for 3 days. They finally gave me the checkup, and the doctors walked out saying, "Well, we've lost another one." And a nurse spoke up and she says, "Wait, I want to try one more thing." She put a mirror under my nose. And there was just enough steam. She said, "She's living." Mm. So then from then on, I was put in ICU.
Now you, of course, have no memory of this because you were in a coma, right?
It's a good thing I don't have a memory of this.
Yeah.
I have a subconscious mind, though, when the sky gets a little black.
I can imagine.
Then I get a little scared.
Listen, let me interrupt you for a second, because you were sucked out of your car, and you said 500 feet away from the turnpike. What about your husband? Was he sucked out? Was he blown somewhere else? Or?
Well, yes. I don't know where they found him. Hmm. But whenever they found him, when they picked him up, he moaned. So then they put him 40 miles north. That would be Wichita, because they knew he had life. Mm-hmm. And they put the real serious ones in El Dorado.
So he was in a hospital 40 miles away, but you, of course, didn't know that. You didn't know anything.
I didn't know that.
Were you in the hospital in the town of El Dorado?
I was in El Dorado, Susan B. Allen Memorial, and I was in there for 60 days. And they had given me all kinds of tests and everything. Well, they couldn't do too much of the tests. And my whole right side was broken. My shoulder, my pelvis, my ankle. And I had to have all my hair cut off because I had big cuts in the back of my head.
I can imagine.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And Isabel lives in Butler now, by the way, which is why she's visiting with us here in the studio. But you were originally from the Johnstown area?
Johnstown area.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in Johnstown for General Motors Acceptance Corporation.
GMAC.
GMAC. And in 1976, the flood came in Johnstown, and it flooded our office out. So I was transferred to Pittsburgh. And then in 1980... I went on a trip to Toronto Fair in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I met some very nice people from Butler, and I was about ready to retire, and I did not want to live in Pittsburgh. So 1982, I moved up here to Butler.
That's how you ended up in Butler, huh?
That's how I ended up in Butler.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So after the tornado, by the way, this is 1958, folks.
Yes.
60 years ago this weekend that the tornado hit. I've looked online through some of the newspapers in Kansas back then, and I found a couple of stories about it. This was obviously a huge story. Where do I find my numbers here? The early report. Now, this was from the Associated Press, the AP Newswire. The day after the tornado. And so their information was still preliminary. And let me just read you a couple of sentences here. A tornado devastated El Dorado, or El Dorado. I say El Dorado because there's a little village up in the northeastern part of Butler County, and everybody pronounces that El Dorado. The Spanish pronunciation would be El Dorado. Anyway, devastated El Dorado. At least 13 persons were killed and 49 injured. Now, get this. You may not have seen this before, Isabel. The commander of the Turnpike Highway Patrol said his men were unable to account for the occupants of three automobiles, which the twister swept off the toll highway. That was probably one of yours.
Yes,
One of those would have been yours.
And they were popping up like popcorn.
And they were unable to account for the occupants. Little did they know that you were lying in a temporary morgue. 150 houses destroyed, an elementary school destroyed. The damage was pretty amazing. And this is something else you may not have known. And again, I'm reading from the Associated Press Wire story that came out the following day. Doctors had to work with the feeble light of candles at El Dorado's only hospital, and a temporary morgue was set up in the 4-H Club building.
Yes.
There were 11 bodies lying inside. One of them was probably yours.
Yes.
Because
mm-hmm.
they thought you were dead.
Mm-hmm.
So that was from the Associated Press Wire story the day
after the
tornado.
And it's just like this. My doctor's wife, Sigrid, said to me, every morning, every meal, you were the subject. For breakfast, the subject, how is Isabel?
They were talking about you, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, if they thought you were dead for 3 days, yeah. they'd probably still talking about you out there.
And because they are, so then all of this is all summed up to my 50th anniversary. I was making some preparations for this book that I have posted.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, now I have to get in touch with the El Dorado Gazette and have them put in a paper about the 50th anniversary, you know, my story.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl said to me, are you going to be able to come? Well, I hadn't thought about that, but I said, she says, I will send you a person by phone to call you. I called, talked to this fella. His name was Don. He was a survivor of the tornado. He had bad damage. And so he met me at the airport, and he said, Isabel, what do you want to do? Because I didn't know anybody. I want to go to all of the cemeteries, which would be between 8 and 9 cemeteries, my doctors, my nurses, my friends. And we put flowers on the graves, and I said a little prayer.
Oh, nice. Now, this would have been 10 years ago, right?
This would be
the 50th anniversary.
2008.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we went to the memorial service, and Dave, they erected a harp. And there's 13 strings on that harp, because that's how many people were killed.
I've seen that. There's a picture of that online, that memorial, that monument to the killer
and
tornado.
And you know, whenever they took the cover off of the harp, everything was quiet. You could hear a pin drop. You could just hear a humming sound. And if you didn't believe in God when you were sitting in those bleachers, something was the matter. Something was the matter. And then at the same memorial service, they recognized me. And there I stood, holding the U.S. American flag and a Pennsylvania, and just nodding. They were saying how sick I was and how bad I was, so on and so forth. And I just loved that. And then after the program, people stood in line wanting to come up to see me. Oh, I can remember. Your face was black. Your face was swollen. Oh, you had no hair. And they were just carrying on. They just greeted me just wonderful.
Now, the doctors and nurses that you had, I would imagine that some of them would have been dead by this time.
Oh,
right?
Yes, they were all gone. Like I told you, between 8 and 9. And like the Hummels that come to see me, you know, day in and day out, hour in, hour out.
Townspeople who came to see you?
Yes. Huh? Yes, they went down to the Red Cross.
Well, here's the thing. This is an incredible story to begin with, but because you had no identification on you, and all of your clothes had been blown off, no wallet, no nothing to identify you, and for goodness sakes, here you are in the middle of Kansas. And you came from Johnstown, but you were on your honeymoon trip, so nobody knew who you were. And there was no way to possibly guess who you were. I mean, here you are from halfway across the country with no ID, and you're in a coma.
That's right.
So what an incredible situation. So they took care of you, even though they had no idea who you were.
That's right. And how they identified me was when they were cleaning up the rubbish and everything, here they found a license plate, and it was rolled up like a cigarette, so they investigated it. Here it was from Pennsylvania, and they called Harrisburg. And then they kept checking my husband in Wichita, and he was saying he was from Johnstown, mm-hmm. but he couldn't get it out clear enough. And so then, of course, they didn't know me either because I couldn't even talk. And but then they finally put the puzzle together.
So they found the license plate. Your husband was saying Johnstown. And they put two and two and
then
together
our,
and got
our initials,
four.
Our initials were inside of the wedding bands.
Uh-huh.
So that was a story on that. But
then,
I don't remember him being transferred to El Dorado. I don't remember big spaces that I don't remember.
So you were in this coma. When did you finally regain consciousness in this hospital?
It was about three weeks afterwards.
3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could you speak right away? Or
no. Just off and on, I'd say something.
Uh-huh.
And like the doctor or the nurses was wanting to feed me my meal, and I would say to them, what am I eating? What are you serving me today? They says, they didn't know. And I said, well, it should say on the thing, you know. But when the homos come to see me, they would check my memory. And they would say, now, after you get better, I'm going to come to see you. How can I get there? And I told them. I told him exactly, yeah. And Dr. Johnson walked into my room one day, and he said, Isabel, this is the 4th of July. And I says, no, 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 no. Now, mind, I can't walk. I'm still amputated.
Yeah.
And so he says, no, he said, I don't hear any flags. Or no horns, no parades. He said, this is the hospital zone. So we just went off of that. But that's the first thing I can remember.
So you didn't think it was the 4th of July because you couldn't...
I couldn't hear the
bands. Hear anything or see anything or anything like that.
Yeah, right.
So exactly. That's one of your first memories after regaining
mm-hmm.
consciousness.
Mm-hmm. And I remember that.
How long were you in that hospital altogether?
60 days. And then after they decided I was safe enough to be flown back to Johnstown.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had identified you by this time.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. What, after they found the license, mm. and my mother was notified. And then after they got me in the plane, they escorted me by ambulance to the airport, and there was a nurse that went with me, and of course they sedated me pretty well. And I was on a stretcher, and the nurse brought peanut butter and crackers and a banana, and that's what we ate. And then I heard a little noise saying, take off your pin, take off your pin. And I thought to myself, now what's going on? And here we had to force land in a cornfield down by Washington, D.C., because the plane had trouble. So
that's all you need after all you'd been through already.
Because he didn't want the ambulances and the reporters to come. Because they would make a big to-do out of, you know. But anyhow, we stayed there all night, got the plane all fixed up, and headed back to Johnstown then the next day.
Mm.
Yeah.
Your mother was still alive?
Yes, my mother was there waiting for me.
So she got you at the airport. Now, you, of course, were still on a stretcher, so I assume you had to go to a hospital somewhere?
Oh, yes, I had to go to the hospital in Johnstown, yes, and there was an ambulance there waiting for me. Mm. But you see, mother wasn't there at the time. They were there say, like, on a Friday, because that's the day I was to come in. So they were at the hospital then. And I was talking real, I had a real squeaky voice. And I was just so homesick. And I was talking loud, you know, and mother
lucky
said...
Lucky you had any voice at all after all you'd been through.
So my mother says to me, she says, Now, you keep quiet, because she said this is an ambulance place, you know, emergency place, and you disturb the other people, you know. I says, Mom, I says, I'm so homesick to see you. I just don't know what to do. So anyhow, everything went fine. They did all of the x-rays. And you remember way back in 1985 or 58, there was no x-ray things like they have today.
Yeah, we had no imaging and all that kind of stuff, no.
So I went through x-ray after x-ray, and some of them was good and some of them wasn't. And
how long did you have to stay in the hospital once you got back to Johnstown?
Several
weeks?
178 days.
Oh, my.
178, off and on.
Yeah.
You know, because with the insurance, you just stayed for so long.
No, I'm assuming that you had to undergo some physical therapy or something over the months?
Yes. January the 1st, 1959, my doctor, Tekanowitz, he was my neurosurgeon, and he came in and he says, little one, you are going to walk tomorrow. So then the next day, I went up to therapy, and I took one step this way, and one step this way, and then back. And they said, that's it. Mm. No, I said, let's do it again. And that night, he was standing at the door watching me. And he sent me the most beautiful dozen of roses. He was so proud of what I was doing.
This would have been 6 months after, because the tornado was in June, and this was the following January, and you took your first steps.
But God was my physician. He healed. He healed all my bones together. And that way I didn't have to have no operations.
Mm-hmm. And even today, you walk very well. You don't have a cane or a walker or anything.
Mm-hmm. Very
which
well.
Which is amazing, considering the injuries you had.
And then in 2009, now this is 1 year after the anniversary, I wrote a book. And I was on your show, it was pretty close to St. Patrick's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, the library heard this. And they called me up and they said, would you come down for a book signing day? People just came in to see the book and come in to see me, people that I used to work with.
Hmm.
And it was just marvelous. And there was a real dear friend that I hadn't seen for a long time. She came and she whispered in my ear, my brother is a minister at Coffeyville. Now, Coffeyville isn't too far from El Dorado. She said, let's plan to go out. I said, okay. So June the 10th, we were in Kansas, and we had a book signing that time. And Dawn and Sandra met me at the airport, and it was late in the evening. And he pulled up to this one place, and it was dark, and I didn't know. You know, I didn't know. And so he didn't say anything, because Don is a very quiet person. Here at the Butler County History Center, and they have Butler County too.
Mm-hmm.
Here on the marquee, it read, Special Program, Arthur, and 1958 Tornado Survivor. And then it blinked. And then it said, June the 10th, 5:45, a book signing and reception will follow. And then in great big letters, Isabel Stevens.
Oh, there you got a picture of the sign, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
One of those electronic signs. Now, this would have been, so you went back for the first time 50 years ago, and then it was a year later that you went back for your book signing. Mm,
but I went back several times before this. Mm. I drove back. So then, what was I going to tell you about the...
I interrupted you.
And then whenever I went to the motel had a great big sign, Welcome, Isabel Stevens.
You were the toast of the town.
I was the toast of the town. And when I went to restaurants, people would come up and say to me, is everything all right? Is everything all right? Do you like this food and so on? Can I get you anything else? And my phone rang off of the wall in the motel because they wanted to come to see me. Now, I've said all of that to say this. Something just seemed to say to me, I think it was God telling me, make something that you can show Kansas exactly what you're doing. I had a person video, and I spoke for a little bit, or maybe about 7 minutes, and then I showed my flowers, my rhododendron, my snowball bush, my iris. My flowers were just in full bloom. And as I was going around checking all of the flowers, I recorded, now just remember one thing, 60 years ago, I was lying in a morgue, and look at me today, flowers and riding my Toro mower.
Oh, you just made this video this year then, huh?
Yes, and it is going to be played tomorrow. That would be the 10th at 5:45.
This is out in Kansas.
El Dorado, Kansas. Yeah.
That's pretty nice.
And then I ended it up by standing by my flagpole, holding the United States flag and Pennsylvania. And
you've got a sweatshirt on today that says Tornado. Is that was that a souvenir from out in Kansas?
Yes, because when I went out in 08, I took my shoes and my watch.
Mm. Oh, that's right. That's the only thing you had on after you were sucked out of the car. Yeah.
And so because I took it, they put them in under a glass that nobody could get to them. So this was an appreciation gift.
So they have like a museum or something out there to honor those who were killed in the tornado?
My friend gave me this necklace. I survived a tornado. And you see the tornado there?
Yeah, I can. So, she's got it on right now.
So this was my story. This is my song.
Well, it's a pretty amazing story. And, you know, when you think about all of the coincidences, first of all, you were from Johnstown. What the heck are you doing in Kansas? Well, it was a honeymoon. And what are the odds that your car would be sucked up by a tornado? All I can think of is the movie Twister. Did you ever watch the movie Twister?
Yes.
Where their car gets, or the pickup truck, I guess it is, gets sucked up by the tornado.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was reading some of the newspaper accounts from, and by the way, as Isabel Stevens mentioned, this all took place, believe it or not, in Butler County, Kansas.
Yes.
Butler County, Kansas. And I looked, I wasn't quite sure where it was. I looked it up on a map, and it's between Kansas City and Wichita.
Right.
But they pinpoint where the tornado hit, and honest to goodness, on the map, just a couple of miles away right now is Butler Community College, would you believe that?
Yes.
Not only Butler County, but Butler Community College. It was like, I'm looking at this Google map, and I couldn't hardly believe it. But all of the coincidences that go together, you're blessed to be alive, Isabel.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Before I came today, I went out to the mailbox. I got a wonderful card. I must read it to you, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
It says, everything that happens in this life is a gift. Even as you struggle through this difficult time, you are gaining strength and wisdom that will help you further down the road. Thank you, my dear friend, for sending it to me. And it just came at a right time. I was getting in the car, and I thought, I'll check my mail. And that just is the climax of the story.
I'm glad you did. We'll talk a little bit more with Isabel. We need to take a quick break here, though, and we'll pick up our conversation in a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. It's a place where generations of folks around here have shopped for shoes. And, folks, that is not an exaggeration. I've been there for 125 years. Generation after generation of families have gone to Miller's Shoes for their shoes. They have a tremendous selection of athletic shoes. If you're looking for those, anybody in the family, children, teens, men, women, they've got all the famous brands right there under one roof. Nike, New Balance, Saucony, I like New Balance, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, Asics, Pro Pet, they've got them all right there, right there. They're also your local headquarters for SAS Comfort Shoes for men and women. And something now that we're into the summer season, SAS makes sandals. And not only are they beautiful, they come in a few different styles, but they're just as comfortable as their shoes. They feel like bedroom. You know, sandals sometimes are, you know, they're nice to wear in the summertime, but I've had a couple of pair that are really hard on your feet. They're not very comfortable. You won't say that with SAS sandals. They feel like bedroom slippers. Check them out. Your local headquarters for SAS Miller's Shoes. They also always have lots of pairs of ladies and men's shoes on racks, sale priced for easy browsing. And you'll find foam treads and hush puppies and trotters and so many other brand names. Miller's Shoes. You'll get the great selection. You'll get that great Miller's price. You'll get that great Miller's fit and a big smile and hello from the Ciprians, too. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler.
Dr. Andrew Szabo of Butler Health System with the story of a remarkable recovery.
Joe's never the kind to be still for long. A hernia can stop that in a hurry. The technology we use makes surgery less invasive, and that makes recovery less challenging. That's a big investment for a community hospital. But then again, we're not the average community hospital.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Isabel Stevens is with us here in the studio. Isabel is a Butler resident, has been since about 1980, right?
Yeah.
So that's 80, 90, you've been here for almost 40 years now, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
She is a survivor, a miracle survivor, quite frankly, of a killer tornado that ripped through Kansas near Wichita back in 1958. It was June 10th, 1958, so 60 years ago this Sunday. And it's a remarkable story that she tells. You were in your early 20s when this happened,
24.
Right?
I was 24.
Just married.
Just married, yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I wanted to say this one thing. Whenever I was going, like I was checked out at the hospital on the 14th of February, the next day was Sunday. So my mother was a Sunday school teacher, and that particular Sunday was miracles. Does God still perform miracles? And Mother asked the ladies of the group there, no, this one lady says, no, there's no such a thing. That was in the olden days. Just then, God opened the door of the church, and I walked in. Mother says, there's your miracle. She was never supposed to work or walk. And there's your answer. So they didn't know what to say. So then God just pushed me right straight up to the very front. And then it says, how can I say thanks for the things that you've done for me? Things so undeserved, yet you gave to prove your love for me. The voices of a million angels could not express my gratitude. All that I am and ever hope to be, I owe it all to you. To God be the glory for the things he has done.
You're obviously a deeply religious person, probably some of that at least stemming from your experience.
That's right. That's right.
60 years ago.
Yes.
I told you I was reading some of the press accounts. I went online to see what the newspapers were writing about 60 years ago following this tornado. There were some people, another couple in a car. Now, they were not sucked up like your car was, but they saw it. This woman said she saw a huge cloud that looked like an umbrella, and they were watching it, and all of a sudden a tail came down out of the cloud, you know, a twister, didn't hit the ground, went back up again, and this happens sometimes. And then they're watching a little while later, another tail came down and then quickly went back up again. And then a third time it happened, and that's when it hit the ground. And it just started this massive destruction.
They call it the wrong way tornado. It was coming a certain way, and then all of a sudden it just turned and went the other way.
Hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The wrong way tornado.
You know, the editor of the El Dorado Gazette, she was 4 years old. And I don't know what happened, but the house was demolished. And I just didn't get a chance to ask her if her parents survived or what happened. But I will find out later. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you think you'll go back to El Dorado again sometime?
Never say never. I would have given anything if I could have been there instead of the tape, the video today. I'd have given anything, but I feel I've done my duty. I've been flying, and I've been out there enough. And not too many people left out there now. The one that the Hummel's granddaughter, she lives in another part of Kansas.
These were people that befriended you and came to visit you in the hospital all the time.
And Janet Lill, she lives in Wichita now, and she's not very good. Her health isn't very good. So, you know, friends do go. But I think I've done it by making the video and sending it out.
I've never been in Kansas. It's flat as a pancake out there, right?
There's certainly
no mountains, no real hills or anything like that, which is why the tornadoes are so dangerous. Mm-hmm. Nothing to
but I
stop
them. I have flowers in my yard, and I make angel food cakes, which you know. And
I know because she's baked me a couple. In fact, this past St. Patrick's Day, God bless you, I got this delivered here to the radio station. This green angel food cake, it was not only delicious, but you dyed it green for me on St. Patrick's Day.
Correct.
With little shamrocks on the top.
That's right.
Well, it was a lovely gesture. Yes. And it was a good cake, too, by the way.
Oh, yes.
And
made from scratch.
Yeah.
Made from scratch.
Is that your specialty, angel food cakes?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm enjoying life. I'm happy. And I try to visit people and make them happy, you know, if they're not too well, or, you know, I try to make them happy too, you know. So.
Do you have any relatives at all left back in Johnstown?
Yes, I have two nieces. My brothers and sisters are all gone. My mother and father are both gone. And I have two nieces and a lot of nephews. And great nieces.
Now, you spent your entire childhood in Johnstown? That's where you went to high school and everything?
Well, it mostly was Dilltown. It was a little town about a half-hour drive from Johnstown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and a little Dilltown. And my grandfather, on my father's side, he had a grist mill. And that's when the people, they called it huckstering at that time. And they would load up their trucks and their wagons and come through Dilltown. And then they would stay. Mother would have a meal for them and have them stay at the house. We had a 13-roomed house. And Dad would put the horses up for the evening, you know. And then they would go on to Johnstown with their huckstering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They never found your car that was sucked up by the tornado?
Never found it. Never found anything. Never found anything. Mm. And every time I went to Kansas, I would always go to where I was found. And the gentleman that his wife cleaned me up, Clarence Smith, he was coming from Wichita. It had already hit Wichita. And he was taking slides of the storm as it was happening. And so he said to me one time I was out there, Isabel, how about I take a pair of clippers and I will clip a piece of that fence? And he did so. And then my brother, he slacked it for me, and I have it today.
That's a souvenir of some standing, eh? Hmm? Do you still have your shoes?
Oh, my, yes.
Oh, no, you said you gave them to the museum out there.
No, I brought them back
home. Oh, you brought them back.
Back home. But, you know, this was awesome. Why isn't it something how they kept my watch and my shoes? Isn't it something how they kept it?
That's all they had for me. Yeah. You know, there was a fictional tornado that's pretty famous out in Kansas, too. L. Frank Baum, when he wrote The Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. He's the author of The Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that starts out with a vicious tornado in Kansas. Mm-hmm. That's one of Dorothy's lines. I don't think we're in Kansas anymore, Toto. And here's the other coincidence. The little red shoes.
There you go.
That Dorothy wore. See? And there's your shoes.
Sure.
That's all you had on, your shoes.
And, you know, I have been speaking at different places. I went up to the learning place in Slippery Rock University.
Yeah, you've been speaking all around, haven't you, over the years?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I went down to St. Barnabas. And I'm going now on the 22nd to the Senior Center down in Tanglewood.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a couple churches in Butler here that wants me to come and speak with them. But I haven't got the okay yet on them.
You enjoy speaking in front of groups and telling your story?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, you know, it's wonderful when you can stand up in front of everybody and tell them what God has done. Just like I told you there at the end, this is my story. This is my song. Praising the Savior all day long. And if you do not tell what God has done for you, then you don't appreciate life. I mean, get it out, what God has really done for you.
After you had your physical therapy and so on, it was probably some time before you could go back to work, I imagine.
Huh? Oh, yes. I was off of work for 10 months. And my neurosurgeon said to me, "Now, Isabel," he said, "I'll tell you what." He said, "If you don't get something else on your mind," because I was going through the divorce, I was going through this and tribulations and trials and tribulations.
I can imagine depression, post-traumatic stress, all kind of stuff.
Yeah, because you looked at me one minute, I'd just nothing but cry. And the next minute, I'd do nothing but laugh. And so he says, "The best thing for you to do is to call your manager and ask him when you can come back to work." I called him, and he was so gracious, so wonderful, and he said, "I want you 3 half days, and I was the cashier. Well, at that time, Bethlehem still had their paydays, and that was one of the weeks, and they stood in line so that I could take their payments, you know. Mm. But I bounced to the very penny. And after I had the 3 half days in, my manager said, "Come back April 1st, after being off for 10 months. And they even sent the bosses from Wichita down to see if the people were really telling the truth about me being so bad. Now, I don't remember that.
So you had already been working at GMAC before you went on this honeymoon trip?
5 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, 5 years beforehand.
Five years. Mm-hmm. 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 So, but everything has been going fine, and it was great. I moved up here and got into flowers like I had in Dilltown, you know. So that was the story.
Yeah, Isabel has a real green thumb with the flowers. She has them from spring through summer and into fall. Some pretty gorgeous arrangements.
And I enter them in the farm show. Oh, I just love the farm show. It's just get blue ribbons, and that's marvelous when you can go out there and pick your prize ribbons and walk out and say, "Look what I did." that's wonderful.
So are you ever going to slow down, Isabel?
No, I'm not going to slow down. I may stop to smell the roses. But no, I don't want to slow down, because then I think of too many other things that needs to be done. And no, No, I'm not going to slow it down.
Always another cake to be baked.
Isn't it, though?
Or flowers to take care of.
Yes, sir.
No more books or anything, though,
no,
huh?
No. I'm not going to write no more books. No.
And you've made your video, so
That's
you got that out
video,
of the way.
Yeah. And I'm anxious to hear from Kansas what they thought of it. And the editor of the paper promised me that she would send me a copy of what she put in the paper. And she's very nice. I said to her, I was mowing the yard, and she says, you were what? I said, I just got done mowing the yard. I said, I have a red Toro mower. You don't? Yeah. And I was telling her different things, and she just couldn't believe it.
So they interviewed you when you were out there?
Oh, my, yes. Mm-hmm. They surely did. And it was just, I just can't tell you. I mean, I just felt so honored to go out there. And now that I'm going to celebrate the 60th year on Sunday.
You said there was one other survivor that you had met, a gentleman named Don.
This was Don. And Don and his mother and sister were in a closet. They didn't have a storm cellar. And here the house just took off. And Don says the only thing I can remember was a bunch of glass breaking and a bunch of noise. But there was a tree or something went into his side and caused some kind of damage. And if it would have went that much further, it would have killed him. But he's suffering now with everything.
Some of the stories that I've read in the wire stories and the newspaper accounts from 60 years ago out in the, what's the name of the newspaper? The Times Gazette out there, and also the Wichita paper. They indicate that people saw this. They saw it coming. You never saw it, huh?
No, I did not see it.
When you were driving along the turnpike.
Because we had stopped right before the exit to polish up, because as soon as we got off at the exit, we had about maybe a 15-minute drive to go see my Aunt Bertha. And we polished up and made a pit stop and filled up with gas. And I don't even remember getting in a car, but I do remember what I wore. I wore a beige skirt and a brown and white sleeveless checked blouse.
Never to be seen again, huh?
Never to be seen again.
Just think, if you hadn't stopped for gas right when you did.
I wonder.
The tornado would have missed you.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Would it or wouldn't have? You just don't know. Those are the things that you just don't know, Dave.
Well, it's a great story that you tell, and it's a miracle that you're still alive, and I'm glad you're with us.
Yes,
I'm
thank
glad
you.
You're with us.
Thank you so much for having me today, because that helps to make the 60th anniversary possible.
All right. Isabel Stevens, Butler resident, tornado survivor from 1958 in Kansas, of all places. Good to see you again.
Thank you very much, Dave.
More to come on It's Your Turn. We take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Cuba, learn a little bit about, what do you think of when you think of Cuba? I mean, I don't know where it is. Fidel Castro, Guantanamo, Havana. That's about it. I really don't know a whole lot about the culture. Liza Gershman does. We'll chat with her coming up on the program next. And then still to come after that, a few minutes. We don't have a great deal of time, but we're going to be talking with English woman Alison Pearson, who's written another funny tale. That's her second, I believe, about how best to describe it. Womanhood. The title of her book is How Hard Can It Be? And it's pretty funny. So we'll chat with her for a few minutes later on the program as well. A quick break right now, and then we'll be back to talk with Liza here on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn on WISI. And don't forget Pirate Baseball coming up immediately following our program today. Pirate Baseball at 2:05, live from Chicago, where the Bucks are playing the Cubs. For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust, When it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Going to be talking about food, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest visiting with us by telephone today is Liza Gershman, who's written a new book called The Cuban Flavor, exploring the island's unique places, people, and cuisine. Liza, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us here today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor to be on your show.
Is this a cookbook, or is it more than a cookbook?
It's much more than a cookbook. Thank you for noticing. Great segue. It's much more than a cookbook. The introduction, I really talk about the politics and history of food, but I keep it a little bit light for those of you who are listening that are really just into cookbooks. After that, there's a section that's all about stocking your Cuban cupboard, and anything in the book is explained right there. Everything is really easy to make, and most of the items are something you can find in your local grocery. If you can't find them, then you can easily buy them online at a retailer like Amazon. Mm-hmm. After that, I go into interviews with restaurant owners in Cuba that are interspersed throughout the book, and they talk about their influences, how they came to own restaurants, what they think the future of food in Cuba will be, and then the book is broken down into food chapters with recipes, carne for meat, pollo for chicken, pescado for fish, etc., etc. There's an entire chapter for vegetarians. I get so many requests for that's something there's a chapter for. And then obviously dessert is a big part of any culture. So there's the dessert chapter. We talk about the drink recipes. You cannot talk about Cuba without talking about daiquiris and mojitos. So that's in there. And then cigars. You know, cigars are such a part of what we think of when we think of Cuba. So there's an entire section about the process of making cigars, why Cuban cigars are the finest in the world. And then the next section of the book is all travel information. So I have Cuba's Best. That's where I talk about the best restaurants and bars in Cuba, and I give you the addresses, the websites, the phone numbers, and the description in case you're visiting on your own. My favorite 8-day itinerary at a glance. General information, so what to pack, how to get there, how to get money, what some of the regulations are, where to go shopping, how to find the best art. And then a section on sprucing up your Spanish with just some fun Spanish phrases. Even though many people in Cuba do speak English, it's always great to use the language of the culture you're visiting. And the book has so many photographs. It's not just pictures of food, even though there are some great pictures of how you find the food and the plated dishes, but it's also really a travelogue of the last 3 years of my life spent in Cuba. I've been going since 2003, but the book really took 2.5 years, and it's concentrated over the last section of time. So I'm really grateful to have had all this experience there, and I've made such deep friendships and been welcomed into so many families. It's been a remarkable experience to get to know the country firsthand in that way.
Well, as I mentioned rather laughingly at the start of our conversation, more than a cookbook, indeed. Well, it is, though, however, a lot about Cuban food and Cuban recipes. And I would venture to say, I mean, you know, most Americans know a little bit about culture, food culture from other countries, Italy, France, Mexico, but Cuba, perhaps no. I've never read anything about Cuban food. You point out in your book, Eliza, that it's kind of complex. There's a lot of different ethnic cultures that feed into Cuban food, right?
You know, something that surprised me my first visit, and still surprises me, really, is when I find Chinese food on a menu.
Yeah.
And that's because Cuba, most people don't know, has a large Chinese population. The Chinese came to Cuba in the 1800s as workers, and there's still quite a big Chinese population in Cuba. And so you see that in the cuisine. Sometimes you'll see a restaurant, and there will be a Chinese fried rice on the menu or a fried wonton. Just interspersed with the rest of the food. There's also a lot of Italian influence on the island. Some of the best Italian food I've had outside of Italy is in Havana. So many Italian restaurants, great Mediterranean restaurants. The food's really changing over the last 5 to 10 years. We've really seen an influence from other cultures, and it's so dynamic and exciting.
Now, for a long time, Americans were not allowed to travel to Cuba, all part of the organized boycott that went all the way back to the early 1960s. Did you say your first visit there was in 03? Did I hear you correctly?
That's correct. I went legally on an educational exchange, and there were virtually no other tourists there at the time. Naturally, people have been going from Canada and Germany and England for a long time, but they primarily were going to a resort area called Veradero, which is about 2.5 hours outside of Havana. So when I was in Cuba and I was going to smaller towns and spending time in Havana on my tour, I saw no other tourists. So it was a fascinating time to be there. And now, of course, it's very different. Over the last few years, tourism has increased, and then now it's decreasing again. So, you know, our government has been yo-yoing them around for quite some time with the embargo and deciding to relax a little bit and then tighten up again. So it's you definitely see, but now you see more tourism outside of the resorts from other nationalities. Mm-hmm. And that then obviously influences the food culture. People are bringing specialty items from their own countries, or chefs in Cuba are learning from visitors. I have a friend who has learned from some French clients of his about sous vide cooking, so I brought him a sous vide machine, and now he's obsessed with it, and that's, you know, a mainstay of his restaurant.
We're chatting, listeners, if you're joining us a few minutes late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, welcome. And we're talking with Eliza Gershman about her new book, Cuban Flavor, Exploring the Island's Unique Places, People, and Cuisine. Well, yes, there's a lot about food in here, but also some gorgeous, some of your photographs of the island are spectacular. And this is another thing that many Americans may not realize, just how beautiful Cuba is. In fact, we could go all the way back to Christopher Columbus when he touched base on Cuba back in 1492, and he wrote down how beautiful it was.
That's right. The island is very diverse. The beaches, of course, are Caribbean beaches, so the sand is white, the water is turquoise. Sometimes it's bathtub temperature. It's really beautiful. The cities are beautiful. The architecture is colonial Spanish, which, as you know, is quite stunning and classic. And then also the colors. You know, it's a Caribbean island, so buildings are painted pale pinks and turquoises and yellows and blues and reds. It's a photographer's paradise. Then when you go out into the countryside, again, it's so different, diverse, and beautiful. My favorite part of Cuba is an area called Vinales, which is the countryside, and it has a mountainous region. And the mountains they're a formation that only exists in Cuba and in Asia, which is so fascinating to me. So you see that where the rocks jut out of the soil, and they are the mountains. They're really giant rock formations covered in green. So it's something that you just don't see anywhere else in the world except for Asia. And that's really unexpected, you know, but there you find it in Cuba. And then you have your lush center island that is just trees and foliage, and it's kind of impenetrable, you know.
Are all the photographs in the book yours, Liza?
They are, yeah. I wrote everything in the book, and I photographed everything in the book. So it's my 12th book, and it really was an honor to work on this book and to be welcomed by it. It was a labor of love, and it took so much collaboration with people giving me the recipes. So I had many, many chefs and friends in Cuba give me recipes, people's grandmothers and mothers. And so everything is authentic. It really did come from the source.
You talk in your book about Cubans being such a deeply resourceful people, especially when it comes to preparing meals and sourcing their ingredients, because a lot of the stuff really wasn't available during the embargo, right?
That's right. I mean, the embargo is still in place, and what that means is that any nation that trades with Cuba cannot trade with the United States. So if you imagine having an inability to trade with America, it probably makes your decision pretty easy. So when you're going into a Cuban grocery store, for example, there are only a few. There's one brand of oil rather than the 40 that you might find on the shelf in a grocery store here. Mm-hmm. And when that one brand of oil runs out, then there's no oil available to you. And so then you just wait and you hope that oil will come, and you just don't know when it will come. Same for butter, same for anything like that. The lines for meat are very, very long. Cubans themselves are not allowed to purchase beef. That's reserved just for tourists. So it is incredibly difficult as a Cuban to get the right protein and sustenance, and it's a very complicated place, as one could imagine, and we're really not helping that right now. So it's okay to be anti-government, but we should remember that there are 11 million people who really need our help. And they are the most resourceful, resilient people I've seen on the planet. I've been to 51 countries, and Cuban people, despite their circumstances, are so vibrant and so joyful. There is so much music, so much art, so much dancing, so much love and community and connectivity. It's really inspirational.
This might fly in the face of the opinions, or at least the misconceptions, of a lot of Americans, because, you know, we hear Cuba, we still think of a picture of, you know, Fidel Castro in his military uniform. Unless perhaps you've seen some pictures of, I don't know, this seems to be in every travelogue, brightly colored cars in Cuba. Is that still the case, Liza?
It is still the case. You can go in a multitude of 1950s cars. They are, some of them, very, very, very well maintained, and it's just beautiful to see. What my understanding is that Russia has just made a deal to bring in 20,000 new cars, so that will change pretty quickly. Anybody that wants to go see the old cars, I recommend you come down now. We do offer legal trips every day to Cuba. We're always up to date on the most current regulations, and you can go on a trip with us through our website, cubanflavorbook.com. You can also order the book that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. CubanFlavorBook.com, that's the website?
That's the website.
What about restaurants? Are there a lot of restaurants in Cuba?
There are so many restaurants. Over the last 3 years, you really have seen an increase in creativity in restaurants and entrepreneurship. So many outside investors are Cubans who have come back with U.S. dollars. And so some of the restaurants in Cuba are just as good as you might find in San Francisco or New York. It's incredible. They're beautifully done. And when you go to a restaurant that's owned by a local and not the government, you are really helping the Cuban people. A friend of mine owns a restaurant. He has 50 employees, and that means he's not just helping 50 people, he's helping 50 families. And then each of those families, in turn, are assuredly helping neighbors and friends. So it's incredible. Those people are all getting access to more food and better food. They're all getting bigger paychecks than they would have if they had a government job. An average Cuban salary with a government job is $25 a month. But again, if you work in the restaurant sector, you're making tips, you're making a base salary, something that's quite a bit more capitalistic than what you would see anywhere else. So it's wonderful to go and to support the Cuban people by going to these restaurants that are locally owned and by going and taking local taxis, local drivers, staying at Casa Particulares, which is a homestay or an Airbnb experience, the same thing. So that's really supporting the people of Cuba and not the government, which is really what we want to be doing, is support the Cuban people.
She is an award-winning photographer, listeners, and also a very accomplished writer. And that's Liza Gershman, who's been our guest here. The title of her book, you want to learn a little bit about Cuba? I certainly have, just chatting with her here for the last few minutes. The book is called Cuban Flavor, Exploring the Island's Unique Places, People, and Cuisine. And you gave us a website a few minutes ago. Could you repeat that one more time, Liza, as we wrap up here?
That's right. It's CubanFlavorBook.com, and you can purchase the book there or come on a trip with us to Cuba. We offer trips every day and a variety of price ranges. They're all legal, up to date on the most current regulations, and that's CubanFlavorBook.com.
Thank you, Liza. Nice to meet you. Nice to chat with you today. Thanks much.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been an honor.
Okay. So long now.
Bye.
What is it about a pet dog that makes you feel so good? What is it? Unconditional love? Ask for little in return? A pat here? A snuggle there? You know what I mean. It's this level of comfort that our dog O'Shea offers at Thompson Miller Funeral Home in downtown Butler. Comfort. Love. We've heard so often that when O'Shea is present at a funeral here, she offers a level of comfort that's indescribable. Comfort for the family and comfort for everyone attending. Yes, O'Shea is available for a funeral service, but only if requested by the family. So come on in and meet O'Shea. See why so many folks want her at a funeral. And while you're here, ask about our unique services, our competitive costs, and our unique cremation program. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
Dr. William Saar of Butler Health System with the story of a remarkable recovery.
Come fall, Dale's mind wanders toward the woods. I want the rest of him to follow, but his ankle wouldn't allow it. With the latest technology and our talented caring team, we were able to get him back out there. It's about improving the quality of people's lives every day, and Dale is proof.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care, but more importantly, we know why we have to.
There are two distinct periods in music history, the big band era and doo-wop. Put them together, you've got yourself one swinging night of entertainment. The 16-piece Pittsburgh doo-wop big band with vocal accompaniment will feature tunes from the 50s, 60s, and 70s on Saturday, June 9th at Tanglewood, your hometown center for entertainment. Doors open at 6, dinner by Chef George at 7, showtime at 8. As always, it's BYOB. Tickets are only $30. Call Tanglewood, 287-0021.
WISR 680, your classic hit station in Butler, will now conduct a test of the emergency alert system. This system is designed to provide you necessary information in the event of severe weather or a local emergency situation. This is only a test. This concludes this test of the emergency alert system here on WISR Butler.
Upcoming news on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Dave Malarkey is my name, by the way. We're chatting with a guest author, Allison Pearson, who joins us by telephone from New York City. We want to talk about her new novel, How Hard Can It Be? Allison, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes.
Lovely to talk to you, Dave.
So, How Hard Can It Be? This is actually a follow-up to an earlier novel, right, which continues the main character, Kate Reddy?
That's exactly right. So in 2002, I don't know how she does it, came out, and that was about Kate Reddy, who was juggling little kids and a busy job and broken nights and all the stuff. And I was at an American book signing, and a lady came up to me, and she smiled, and she said, believe me, when you've got little kids, that's the easy part. Wait till Kate has got teenagers. And so the new book, How Hard Can It Be, it's 15 years later, and Kate is now with juggling teenagers. She has elderly parents, and she's coming up for her 50th birthday and trying to get back into work. So this is a whole different set of challenges, but hopefully all told with a lot of laughter and humor.
And, of course, Richard, her husband, is back, but this time around he's quit his job. Is that right?
He has, Dave. He's quit his job, and he's taken up cycling, so he's wearing a lot of embarrassing lycra, and he's spending a lot of money the family doesn't have on gadgets for his bike. So, so Kate has to pick up the slack and get a job, but because she's approaching her 50th birthday, she finds it really hard to get a job, and she knocks 7 years off her age. And as she's perimenopausal, she said it's quite hard to be lying about your age when you can't really remember anything. So she keeps having to wonder when cultural references come up, whether she was alive for the Beach Boys and stuff like that. So there's a lot of jokes about things that women will really relate to.
Does she, in fact, is she able to get a job?
She does get a job. Yes, she does. And she says that she's old enough to be the mother of most of her colleagues. In fact, it was really interesting that when I had written the book and I sent it to a few friends, and two of my close friends admitted they were lying about their age at work, both very capable, attractive women. And I just thought that was very interesting, that women, you know, as they get older, they fear that they lose relevance and so on. So the book, although it's kind of laugh out loud, it's also got some serious themes as well.
Yes, and there are some other things, and we're not going to spill the beans here, obviously.
No.
People be interested in reading the book, but just to tease a little bit, I guess an old flame shows up, an ex-boyfriend or something.
A very lovely American business client shows up, and in the movie he was played by the very lovely Mr. Pierce Brosnan, who I met on the set of the film, actually, and who was just delightful. So Jack Abelhammer is back, and the very exciting news, Dave, actually, is that we the producers of Big Little Lies have just bought How Hard Can It Be for a TV series. So I'm going to be meeting them next week in LA, and hopefully we'll see that on our screens next year.
Well, that's terrific. By the way, the motion picture that Allison Pearson referred to, folks, was the movie that was made from her first huge-selling, best-selling novel, I Don't Know How She Does It. And you had Sarah Jessica Parker, I think, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, she was great. And there was a scene that became very famous where Kate, the character, discovers there's a bake sale at school the next day, and she hasn't got time to bake her own, so she takes shop-bought pies and kind of beats them up and sprinkles icing sugar over them. And so I think a lot of women just related to that whole kind of the guilt and the struggle of trying to keep everything going.
Allison Pearson, listeners, lives in Cambridge, England. You may have guessed that after listening to her for a couple of minutes here today. So tell me, do women in the UK relate to the same things that women in the United States relate to in terms of this time of life, Allison?
Well, do you know, it's completely universal. I think that's one of the great things. I mean, the book's, you know, done very well in France and Germany, and, you know, people are buying it around the world. And, yeah, it's these are universal themes, you know, women and aging, women dealing with teenagers on social media, you know, women having their parents getting older and being responsible for them as well. I mean, there's a lot about parenting kids in the age of social media, and as anybody will tell you, this is a whole new set of problems when you've got teenagers online. So the book actually begins with Emily, who's Kate's daughter, has rather innocently been asked by a girl at school to share pictures of her summer tan lines. And Emily, Dave, I don't know if I dare say this to you, but she has sent a picture of her naked butt to her friend, and it has gone completely viral. And this picture is called a belfie, which is a selfie of your backside, if we can imagine anything so horrendous. and then lots of problems come from that. So as I said, lots of comedy, but raising some serious social issues. And a very good friend of mine actually in the States, she said that she had parental controls on all the devices in her house. And one day a kind of computer guy came round and he said, "I'm sorry to tell you, Mrs. Seltzer," he said, "but your daughter has downloaded how to bypass parental controls and she's charged it to your credit card." So this is the nature of person we're dealing with, Dave. They are they are completely familiar with this new language, and we just, you know, we just don't understand it, most of us.
And problems that have surfaced in families with teenagers all over these times. You've received some sparkling reviews from the press in the UK. Is the book now just being published here in the United States, Allison?
It came out yesterday, and we had a lovely, lovely review in USA Today. So, it's just very early days, but it's exciting, and I'm doing lots of bookstores and your show, doing all these radio shows, and hopefully reminding those people who read the first one and who could really relate that this is a woman at another stage in her life, you know. And it's a celebration of women in midlife. I think women often feel kind of shame or anxiety about aging, and this is really saying, you know, this is a great time, this is a great age to be a woman, and we bring so much experience and capability, I think, to the world.
Well, one of the reviews from the Telegraph, a newspaper in the United Kingdom, said, quote, "The funniest and most feminist writing of the year, How Hard Can It Be, is a rare thing, a sequel that matches and even surpasses the original." And you got another great review from Library Journal that called your novel Side-Splitting a follow-up to I Don't Know How She Does It. The electricity is positively sparkling. Laugh out loud, yet all too realistic. And those are the best laughs, right, when you read about something in a novel?
Well, absolutely. I think that the laughter that comes from a genuine recognition, and I always think that I think what the readers love is like thinking, oh, I'm not alone, you know, oh, boy, have I been, you know, boy, have I been in that situation, you know, boy, has my child spoken to me like that, or, you know, all those different things. And I think it's that sense that these are shared experiences we're going through. And I think it's so nice to be able to laugh at them as well, because there's a lot in life that's quite tough. And, just being able to, I like to make comedy because I think, you know, it just helps people so much more.
We're talking, listeners, with Allison Pearson. She's in the States right now on a book tour. We're talking to her in New York City. You said you're going to be out on the West Coast here soon, talking about the next TV deal?
I'm going to be in L.A. I think it's next Wednesday and Thursday. I'm dotting around. I'm going to be in Washington, D.C., and I'm going to be in Boston, and I'm going to be out on the West Coast, Thursday, Friday, I think. I'm just kind of like, you know, I kind of wake up in the morning, I think, where am I? But yeah, no, definitely going to be out there. Really, really looking forward to that.
Yeah, if it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium.
I'm kind of I did on a previous book tour was on TV and what I thought was Chicago, and I said, "I love Chicago," and the guy said, "Man, this is Seattle." I thought, okay, I'm so sorry.
That's funny. You know, a lot of folks here in America, at least, think that British comedy doesn't translate all the time to American tastes. I suspect that is not the case. Just talking to you for a few minutes here, Allison, I think you'd be funny wherever you are.
Well, you know, maybe that's true of certain kind of genres, but I think when you're talking about the kind of universal experience of, you know, you're in a kind of on your way to a kind of business thing, and your mom calls up and she's saying, "Do you think I should go for this color rug or this color?" And, you know, I think it doesn't matter whether you're in, you know, Michigan or, you know, or in London. It's just the, you know, these things, the having kids, worrying about kids, you know, trying to get in shape to go back to work, and, you know, all those things that I think everyone can relate, really. I hope so, anyway.
One final question before we run out of time here today. You live in Cambridge, England, right? That's a university town.
Huh? Yes, I do. Yes.
Is that your hometown, or did you end up moving there, or what?
Oh, I moved. I was from South Wales originally, which is over the other part of the country. And, yeah, we moved to Cambridge when the kids were little. But we may be going back to London now because the children are saying, hey, why did we move to, you know, why aren't we in the city? So, yeah, we'll probably move back. But I love being in the States and catching up with so many American friends and sharing the book, you know.
She's a funny lady and a great author, folks, and her latest book is How Hard Can It Be by Allison Pearson. Allison, delightful to talk with you today. Thanks for being
Dave,
with
thank
us.
Dave, thank you for having me so much. Thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
So long.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 49-49. The pick three is 649-649. The pick four, 4013. The pick five, 80895. The wild ball for each of those is 7. The treasure hunt, 1, 9, 13, 17, and 21. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $45,000.
I was just 49 when I started getting mail from AARP. AARP? Shoot, I was just getting started in life. Then I hit my 60s and retirement was on my mind. The big question was, did I prepare? What about healthcare? Are my finances in order? Not just for my wife and me, but for the kids and grandkids. I got the answers I needed from attorney Michael Pater, specializing in elder law, long-term care, Medicaid, and wills and estate planning, is attorney Michael Pater in the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center. Phone 287-7724.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
At Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, our orthopedic surgeons, sports medicine specialists, physiatry, and rheumatology experts are committed to your health. Whether it's joint pain, a sports injury, a workers' comp injury, or you need help managing your arthritis or chronic pain, their physicians provide high-quality care to patients in 7 locations, including 2 right here in Butler and 1 in Slippery Rock. Tri-Rivers accepts most major insurance plans, including Highmark and UPMC. Learn more at TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
It's time to strike up the band on another exciting season of the Musicians Concert Band. Hi, this is Jimmy Ciprian, voice of the band, along with conductor-director Jeff Kohner, as he turns over the baton to Punxsutawney's own Dr. Jim Colonna. Dr. Colonna has chosen a wide variety of music, including the America Forever March and, of course, the Stars and Stripes Forever. The concert takes place Thursday, June 14th, 7:30 p.m. at the Butler Intermediate High School. That's Thursday, 7:30, Butler Intermediate. See you there.
are back in action, and we've got all the coverage for you right here on WISR. Join us all season long as Greg Brown, Joe Block, Steve Blass, Bob Walk, and John Wehner take you through the 2018 season. Pirates Baseball is brought to you by Cash Dollar & Associates, the Visiting Nurses Association, Butler Smiles Dental Care, Thrower Concrete, and Cunningham Shaner. Cheer on your Bucks on Butler County's home for the Pirates, WISR 680 AM.
Current temperature is 77 degrees. We're going to join Pirate Baseball coming up here on WISR.
This is Butler's hometown radio station, your source for the latest local news, sports, and community activities. Only on WISR, 680 AM Butler.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by TheraWorks Relief.
I'm Dave.